Blow the horn. Go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
Keith fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Rose!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can play against. And make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our M.O. with the team.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready. All
right. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, I can't speak for Stella, but for 59 minutes Saturday night, the Tide got its groove on down in the Grove against a bunch of outmanned rebels. You happy yet?
I'm a little happier. Each week, I seem to be getting a little more pleased. You know, from Saban's perspective, he got a lot of what he wanted the other night. You know, we put them away with five straight touchdowns to start the second half. The defense really stiffened at the goal line. And even though we were blowing them out, you know, we were able to keep them out of the end zone at the end of the game in the fourth quarter. And then with 5.5 minutes left, we take the air out of the ball. And, you know, he loves it when we take a knee. And so I think he got everything he wanted except that, you know, that first offensive series where we had another mental lapse.
Well, start us out on offense. What caught your eye?
I would have to start with Trent Richardson. I mean, I know you're going to be all about Jostin Fowler, so I think I got to get Trent out of the way first. I was listening to some things yesterday talking about was that his Heisman run on that big touchdown run in the third quarter, and he just showed everything on that particular run. I mean, he showed his speed, he showed his agility, he showed his balance, his patience, you know, just his power. I mean, that was just a phenomenal run. I mean, he's done a lot of really good things, but that kind of reminded me of that run his freshman year against Arkansas where he bounced off of 7 or 8 guys and scored a touchdown. I think we're going to look back like last year when Cam Newton had his big run against LSU, and this is going to be his defining play of the year.
The run kind of reminded me of the big run that Reggie Bush had a couple of years ago during his Heisman streak. And, you know, I don't know if you remember, but we were at the sports book at the Bellagio, and it was a late West Coast game. And, you know, he was running roughshod all over Fresno. And he just had a sensational run where he did a little stutter step along the sidelines and ran it on for a touchdown. It was one of those signature runs that, you know, today, if you go back and they're showing Reggie Bush, you know, college highlights, you're going to see that play. This run by Trent, I think, stood out in a very similar fashion.
I agree. And what was so key about it, if you go back and look at the play, is Warmack was pulling to the right and they had sealed off the right edge. And that's where the play was supposed to go. And he could have easily gotten 10 yards over there. And at the last minute, he decides to cut back to the left. You got a cornerback blitzing from the outside. He makes him miss. He makes a defensive lineman miss and the safety all in the backfield. So he makes 3 guys miss in the backfield before he turns on the jets. But the other thing I think about that run that was so key is just the hustle of everybody. I mean, DeAndre White, if he keeps playing like this, he's not even going to be able to see the doghouse because what he did downfield and what Marquise Mays did helping DeAndre White at the 5-yard line. And hell, I even saw Barrett Jones hustle his ass all the way down there at the 4-yard line blocking somebody. I mean, if all these guys keep getting a hat on a hat like this, there's nobody going to stop this offense.
And you know what? Just talking about hustle, I want to give a shout out to the cornerback for Ole Miss. He got up, ran, and while Trent was sort of doing his bobbing and weaving and slicing across the field, he actually caught up to Trent. And when Trent did that one stutter where he kind of gave the leg and then ran on in for the end zone, that was the same cornerback. That was number 21 in both instances.
So he's the guy that was in the backfield to start.
He was the guy in the backfield to start, and he's the guy that was rudely showed his seat at the end.
Yeah, they even showed the camera. I'm sure you saw this after he was holding his jock strap. He just kind of threw his hands up like, I give. And apparently he's a true freshman. So, oh yeah, my gosh, what is he thinking? He's like, I didn't play against anybody like this in high school.
you know, but I give him a lot of credit for his effort. But, you know, Trent was just in full-on beast mode. And so when he runs for a 183, four touchdowns.
On 17 carries, though. Last week we were talking about 20 and, you know, we were loving 20 carries. I mean, my gosh, he only had 17 carries and he averaged 10 yards.
Yeah, I was going to get to that. The 17 carries, you know, is not beating him up. You know, 17 carries, four go for touchdowns. And so he's not getting tackled to the ground on those plays. You know, he had a solid workman's day, but didn't take as many, you know, hard hits as he normally would, you know, 20, 25 carries for, you know, 110 yards, for example.
No, that's true. And, you know, before we jump off Trent, you know, you got to back me up on this, you know, that I thought Trent was better than Mark. And I thought Mark was pretty special. And you and I even had some talk about this last year in a comparison of Mark and Trent. And as special as Mark is, I have contended for a long time that Trent was just, he was Mark plus a little bit more.
I was impressed that we put Trent in a wildcat formation on fourth down. I was glad to see us use him different ways, and him converting that fourth down I thought was impressive from the wildcat. We went for another fourth down. It was fourth and four, and we went for a long kick. I wish that had been fourth and three. We may have seen some more Trent in the wildcat.
What did you think about him putting the field goal unit in at that point just to see if they could hit a 44-yarder? And I guess he was just trying to say, if I need them later in the year, are they going to be able to hit this?
Yeah, it was a 54-yard kick. And
oh, yeah, excuse me, 54.
We were embarrassingly short with that. I don't know. That was probably the worst decision of the game, was to go ahead and kick that. And it was a short kick. I think the kicker was the only one that knew that that could have been returned. And he gets a concussion for his efforts.
It did remind me of arena football when the guy caught it in the end zone. Did he come back in at that, or is that why Shelley was doing all the kickoffs from then on?
Yeah, that's why Shelley took over. I think Foster was out the rest of the day.
Well, hey, something else that stood out for me is just the play of the big uglies in general. And I have been beating up Warmack and Steen about getting their butt beat on a few plays. But when I went back and looked at this game, when I say the big uglies, I got to throw in the tight ends as well. I mean, all eight of these guys played a really good ball game, the three tight ends and the five offensive linemen. And, I mean, just on three of Trent's touchdown runs, it was all different formations. I mean, you know, we were doing two tight ends. We were doing three tight ends. We were pulling Warmack. I saw one play, which was pretty key, where they took Steen and Fluker on his second touchdown, and all they did is they trapped between them. Normally, you don't see a trap with the right guard and a right tackle like that, but it gave them leverage to be able to make the kickout block. And it was just so interesting that everybody on that line of scrimmage pulled in that game, except for Fluker, and these tight ends seemed to be really comfortable with the playbook, and AJ's really comfortable audibling. It's just going to make this team really hard to prepare for.
The offensive line definitely is getting better. I thought Warmack pulled a number of times, and I thought he did so effectively. I saw Steen pull once that I focused on. I'm sure he did it other times before. I found myself a couple of times, you know, kind of rewinding when Trent was almost tackled or tackled in the backfield or, you know, a short game, you know, trying to look for, well, who missed their block? And a couple times I said, well, Steen just missed his block. And I went back and watched it again, and no, Steen's blocking his guy 5 yards down the field. It was Fluker a number of times that really missed his block bad. I was surprised that Quanjo didn't come in, that Cyrus didn't come in for Fluker, you know, similar to last week.
I think Fluker, for the first time this year, had a guy that just was much faster than he was. He was going against some quickness that he had not gone against yet. But all in all, I really think that they played well. Now, did you notice when Cyrus came in? Did he only come in the fourth quarter at mop-up duty, or did he come in earlier?
I was watching for him, and, you know, that's kind of the trouble of watching on TV. It's hard to keep up with, you know, some of the subtle, you know, personnel moves. But I did not explicitly see him until the fourth quarter. And then our rotation was sort of partial. We didn't bring in the full second offensive line. We had Cyrus and we had McCullough in there, but we still had Vallejos.
I saw that.
We were selectively taken out. So we had, like, you know, instead of our first team and second team, we had like our, you know, one and a half team in there. And then we slowly started to rotate in some of the other guys. But we had, you know, McCullough in there blocking for McCarron, you know, for example.
Why do you think he just did it part first string, part second string like that?
It's a little bit of, you know, getting some guys out. And so let's get Barrett out. and then a little bit of, and give them a couple more reps. So we want to keep a couple of the starting linemen in there. But then I think the most significant factor is, you know, McCullough's a senior. Let's see how he can integrate himself in with the seniors or with the starters in the event that he has to play some reps.
Okay. What else jumped out at you on offense?
Well, you know, you mentioned Fowler, you know, the fact that our, you know, Lacey played, but only just a little bit. And I think we were wise to not overextend his carries. Let's give him a couple of carries to kind of get fresh, but he's rehabbing that turf toe. So let's get him a couple carries and let's get him on the bench. And so we were able to bring in Fowler, our third team running back. He had 9 carries for a 125, 2 touchdowns. He had a nice long 69-yard run. And then Blake Sims, our fourth team running back, you know, he had 5 carries for 74 yards. And had there been more time in the fourth quarter where we just didn't start taking knees, he was moving the ball at will against their backups with our backup offensive line. You know, he could have gone for 85 and a touchdown pretty easily.
Sure. Why do you think Lacey, I was kind of surprised with the 5 carries that he got, that they were even audible in him and flanking him out wide to the wide receiver position. They were moving him around pretty freely, and he didn't seem to be missing a step. It was interesting that not only were they giving him work, but they were giving him work and doing things with him like they're doing with Trent so he could keep his head in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, a couple of things there. Let's give him some reps. Let's get him out on the field. You know, let's keep him fresh. Let's not limit his playbook. In most instances that we've seen so far, we've not really gone to the running back as a wide receiver. And so that gives him a chance to get reps without really risking an injury, if you will.
What did you think about Jostin Fowler's run, man? You didn't really talk this up a little bit because that's your boy. And, you know, now he's broken another one from over 50 yards.
Oh, no, I was excited about it. It was a nice run. You know, it does, you know, kind of stand out as you got a worn down defense. And now we've got this 250-pound bowling ball and he can run a 70-yard touchdown. I mean, at some point you got to say, you got to be kidding me.
Well, it definitely presents a different facet to the game than even a Sean Alexander when we were in LSU and he comes in at the third string tailback and does what he does with his finesse. I mean, it really presents a whole different problem because most guys, 250 pounds, they're not going to break it. Well, now he's done one from, what, 40-something yards and 69 yards? That's impressive. I've got one other thing I want to talk about. There's a bunch of things we could talk about in this game, man, because, I mean, we kicked their butt. But early in the game, after the lapse, which we'll talk about on defense, and we got the ball back, we had a third down play. It was like 3rd and 2 or 3rd and 3. And that's when he had the big pass to Williams. And what I found interesting about this, and I just kind of wanted to get your take on it, was instead of running the ball, we did a pass play. But we audibled and we actually moved Michael Williams from the left side to the right side. And we brought Smelly up to the line of scrimmage at the left side. And then these two guys did a quick cross. And Smelly actually, he picked Michael Williams' guy. But he did such a good job of drawing his guy over to Williams that he just had them both at the same place. It wasn't an obvious pick. And that's how Williams got free. And next thing you know, this big 270-pound guy is in the open field and he goes for 34 yards. I just thought it was a great play call by McElwain. And it's like, we're going to come up with something new, new wrinkle that we haven't done all year. We're going to jumpstart our offense because we're down 7-0. It was just a great play call.
Yeah, I remember that play. And it wasn't a pick so much that, you know, Smelly, you know, lined up and knocked down or.
He sought his guy out, though. He did.
If you're running man-to-man on the two tight ends that are running a narrow cross, that's 4 people. You take linebackers and a safety that's maybe cheating up a little bit. You've got 4, 5, 6 bodies in a very tight, confined space. Somebody's picking somebody. And the tight end doesn't even have to touch him. There's just trash. And so, you know, as I was watching the play, I thought, well, that's a pretty clever design.
Right.
So that the cover man gets caught up in the trash.
Right.
And yeah, and that freed up Mike Williams for a really nice play. And he kind of rumbled a little bit. You know, we saw his top end speed, but, you know, he was able to rumble for a nice, you know, whatever it was, 15, 18 yard gain.
That's what was so key to me is it actually went for 34 yards. And so we were at our 30-yard line when we do that play, and the next thing you know, we take it all the way to their 35. And so I just thought it was a huge momentum. We're in our facing our first third down. We've just had a big loss on second down. And, you know, we're away. We're down by seven. And we get that play from our 30 and we go all the way to their 35-yard line. I think it just really jump-started the offense.
That's a good play call. It's an easy play call. It's a safe play. And it's nice to see something like that in the repertoire.
Hey, what'd you think about AJ? Here's where we could just push the play button from last week, but, you know, no need to go over the stats because they're just like last week. But, you know, once again, high completion percentage, takes care of the football. You know, I think he was 7 of 11 on third down, and he's distributing the ball to many people. What do you think about this guy again?
Well, it's hard not to, you know, just repeat what we did. I mean, we had 8 receivers catch balls. And his numbers, you know, he was up near 80% on his completion percentage. I mean, he's just continuing to develop and continuing to evolve. I do think, you know, I paid, you know, a little closer attention to that, you know, during the game, that we did complete a lot of shorter passes. We went for strikes down the field and we really did.
A lot more.
Yeah, we went for it more.
Yep.
You know, we didn't hit him the way that we would like to hit him, but I just think he's building up a significant amount of confidence and comfort on the field. You know, he's not thrown an interception since, you know, the first game of the season. He threw 2 in that game, and one of them was even tipped by his own receiver. I just think he's continuing to develop. We're continuing to see, you know, an upward trajectory in his performance. And I think when push comes to shove in some of these tight games that we're going to have, I think he will have demonstrated enough ability and enough confidence that we're going to take some of the reins off of him.
I think they're even doing this now with all these audibles. I mean, he was doing a lot of checks at the line of scrimmage, and he's doing a way lot more checks than Greg McElroy was ever able to do in his first year, you know, as a starter. It was just good to see. What do you think about the crappy play from the refs? You know, Ole Miss finishes the game with no penalties, and we had 5 penalties in the game, and you know, with the exception of the intentional grounding, which I think was a good call, some of those holding calls was pretty bad.
Well, I thought the 2 holding calls on Vallejos were accurate. And, you know, unfortunately, one of them took a touchdown off the board.
Why'd you think accurate? Because I think on one of those plays, he just whooped his man and just took him to the ground. But he didn't hold.
There was a little bit of a hold involved there. That was, you know, that was a takedown move. You know, the official was, you know, spot on, you know, very quick with the flag. And even the commentators, you know, were talking about that play kind of had a little, you know.
See, I think that's taking the football out of the game some. Just because you whoop a guy's butt and you just get leverage and he just goes the wrong way and you take him to the ground, I guess having played offensive line, I'm sorry, that was just a good play. He didn't grab his jersey or whatever. I think that was chintzy.
I don't know. I think that was a takedown move. But I do think, though, there were quite a number of times where, you know, Ole Miss was holding our guys and those weren't called, you know, a couple of late hits. There were a couple of times that I thought the Rebels could have been flagged, but they were not.
What else jumps out at you on the offense? Anything else on the offensive side?
I don't think anything necessarily stands out more than what we've discussed. I mean, 615 total yards on offense. That's really impressive. I think we're developing nicely on offense.
What'd you think about that play lapse? I mean, I went back and broke it down. You know, they were talking about blown assignment. You know, I couldn't tell if Barron screwed up or Milner. Which guy was supposed to take the long guy on that play?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, it looks like Milner got beat, but I don't know if he thought he had backside help from Barron. So I really don't know that's really hard to say. I guess all the fans are going to say Milner got beat, which probably means that Barron was out of position.
Yeah, it makes you think that Milner thought that Barron was going to take the deep guy. However, we know Barron doesn't have the top-end speed. And so, you know, I didn't realize till after the game, but that kid, Brazil, I think, or Brazil, you pronounce his name, he's actually a true freshman, and I think he's one of their speed guys. And so I'm sure in the scouting, they knew this guy had speed. So you wouldn't put Barron covering him. And Will Lowry, I mean, he looked like he was supposed to be helping, but he was 10 yards behind the play. And so I think Milner, I guess the more I think about it, given who it was, knowing that Barron wouldn't be able to keep up with him anyway, I think Milner probably dropped the ball on that one. And I think he was caught looking at the quarterback's eyes and didn't realize how fast that kid was.
Yeah, that could be. I do think, though, that, you know, that was one lapse. And, you know, that was probably the biggest. But, you know, that was really one of the maybe the 1 or 2 only lapses of the game. I thought there were 59 minutes of just pure domination.
No, I see what you're saying. I also thought from a strategy standpoint, you know, for Ole Miss, they definitely came out and, you know, they took all their chances because, you know, Mackey had kind of run his mouth about Alabama not being Superman before the game. And I thought it was interesting that, you know, they complete that pass against Milner, and then they took the speedster on the very next series on the first play, and they make him go against Dre and see if he can beat Dre. Now, actually, I think Dre pass interfered on that, and he didn't get a call, but it was interesting that they took their fastest guy, and on the first couple plays out of the gate, they took a shot down the field against both of our cornerbacks. They were very aggressive against us early.
Yeah, and you're right. Dre definitely did pass interfere. We got away with one there. There's no doubt about it. And, at that point of the ball game, and I'm not going to suggest that we would have lost the ball game, but at that point of the ball game, that would have been a significant pass interference. They could have at least at that point gotten a field goal out of it. And, you know, things could potentially start to look different. But, you know, we got away with that one. And then we just went on to, you know, completely close them down the rest of the game. I mean, 14 tackles for loss, 5 sacks. You know, when 59 came on that one, you know, that one first play. And, you know, and I read that, you know, Ole Miss was coming off a bye, and so they had an extra week. And that, you know, even Coach Saban said, you know, hey, they ran that out of a formation that we had not seen before and had not practiced. And so, you know, it's like Florida. They had the bye week as well. They scored on their first drive, you know, sort of the scripted portion of the game.
Right.
Where they can line up and run, you know, these 8 plays, we're going to practice the hell out of them because they're the first 8 plays we're going to run in the ball game. And once you get past them,
right,
once you get past those plays, it's more of a free-form game. And, you know, in both instances, we seem to shut down teams once we get past, you know, their scripted portion.
What did you think about, you know, I was reading before the game Saturday morning, I was kind of surprised. Apparently after practice Thursday, you know, Ole Miss announces that they had 4 guys that were not going to play. Well, one of them is just a backup senior running back. Okay. But then 2 of those players was their starting center and one of their starting guards. And when I read that, I was like, man, it's going to be a long day for Ole Miss.
Yeah, I saw that too. And, you know, I thought it was probably already an unfair contest. And you know, when they start holding people out, it's just more of the same. So, and that's essentially how it played out. You know, they got 0 yards in the first half after that first drive and very low yardage totals on the day. You know, whereas we averaged more than 9 yards a carry, they averaged 0.9 yards a carry. It's tough to win in those situations.
No, that's true. Hey, it is kind of hard on TV, and so I just wanted to see if you saw this. We can talk about Courtney Upshaw and how he played on some key plays. But one of the things that stood out for me is on that first touchdown scored by Ole Miss, which ended up being their only one, I noticed that Alex Watkins, he took the wrong man. He took the quarterback and he didn't take the pitch man. And had he played the pitch man, Dante and Nico was right there to cover the quarterback. If he would have played where he was supposed to, you know, that wouldn't have been a touchdown. And so when I'm seeing that play, I start yelling at the TV. And I'm like, what the heck is Alex Watkins doing playing in space? The only thing this guy has shown he can do is sack the Michigan State quarterback. And now he's shown that he can get a little pressure, you know, rushing off the edge. But he doesn't need to be in space. And so when I went back and just decided to replay the original game, either the second or third series, we still had not seen Courtney Upshaw. I was curious if you saw when he came in the game because he didn't play a lot early.
Well, Courtney was suspended for the first quarter of the game, and that was not released until after the game.
Oh, okay.
And so, yeah, he may have been there to help, you know, set contain on that edge. And he was sitting out for an undisclosed violation of team rules.
Well, then he definitely played some inspired football once he came in. You know, I was listening to something from Gary Danielson about a week ago as he was previewing the Alabama-Florida game. And I think it was the Florida coaches or maybe it was the Arkansas coaches the week before. But when Gary Danielson asked them about the defensive line, he was like, you know, is there a Marcel Darius here? Is there a Marcel Darius type of impact player? The offensive coordinator said, no, they're all pretty good, but there's nobody that we got to shade toward or that we have to double team. I think teams need to start rethinking that because I think it's about time teams better start double teaming Courtney.
well. You know, he had two sacks in the game, like you said, and certainly played inspired. There's going to be a little bit of the competitor in him that says, you know, maybe on that first drive, they don't score that touchdown if I'm in there. And so in some sense, you could say that he certainly made up for that, his play the rest of the game.
What else jumped out at you on defense?
Well, I was glad to see Mosley back in action. I think he was probably limited in the number of reps that he took, but the fact that he was back on the field, I was pleased to see that. We'll continue to ease him along, and hopefully he'll be back up to full strength here first week in November. And then Nico Johnson, I thought, played well. Overall, it was just, I'll tell you what I really take away from the defense, and it's just the brutality of our defense.
We're getting spoiled, man.
We knocked out the Florida quarterback. We knocked out Vanderbilt's quarterback. And we had two players from the Ole Miss team. Now, their quarterback stayed in the full game, which at some point I thought that was dangerous. But we knocked out two of their players.
One guy broke his ankle, didn't he?
Well, one guy broke an ankle and one guy broke a bone in his arm.
Oh, my
gosh. And so I hate to see players go down, you know, with injuries in that fashion. But at some point we're becoming a dangerous team.
That fourth quarter conditioning program of Saban is starting to pay off.
Yeah.
You know what that reminds me of, man? That reminds me of something else in the intro to your podcast. Make their ass quit, man. We're making some people want to quit.
Yeah, and the whole idea of, you know, Saban has said that we want teams to not want to play us. And, you know, that's exactly what's happening. And so you look at, you know, a Florida team that we took out their quarterback. They're having a rough go the rest of the season. And Ole Miss, now that they've lost a couple of players, they were already having a rough go, but they're going to have a rougher go, you know, the rest of the season. And so you take a team like Arkansas that still has to play Florida, or you take a team like Auburn, you know, that played an undermanned Florida, you know, you almost think, you know, they've got to say thanks, right?
Yeah, I started to say they better send us a thank you present. Anything else jump out at you on the defensive side of the ball? But I guess before you answer that, how'd you like seeing Chris Jordan out there for the first time this year?
It was good to see him out there. I know he's been struggling with some injuries. I'm glad that he was able to see some of the field. I hate that it's his senior year and he's going to spend most of it, you know, on the bench and in rehab. But you got a bad back and you're a middle linebacker. Those two things don't work well together.
He didn't seem to be moving very well out there, I guess, is the other reason I wanted to ask you. I mean, I don't know how much he's going to be able to contribute, unfortunately.
Yeah, I don't think that he does contribute the rest of the season. He may get some snaps as sort of a, you know, a pat on the back, but I don't think that he gets significant minutes in significant situations.
Anything else on defense? I got one more thing, but I want to see if you had anything else to add.
No, let her rip.
That key stand at the end of the game. You know, I noticed Dre Kirkpatrick going back to the Alabama fans who had traveled, and he was trying to rev them up before that fourth and goal. And I just thought it was so great that, you know, here this guy is, and a lot of the first-string guys are sitting there saying, we don't want your ass to score. I mean, we're kicking your butt, but we don't want you to score again. We haven't seen that from this team, you know, in years past.
No, that's true. I like that. You know, this game had a little bit of everything, right? It was, you know, so many tackles for loss, so many sacks, so few yardages, you know, yards allowed, a goal line stand, interception. I mean, you name it. This was, you know, up and down the defense. Outside of the first minute was a pretty dominant performance.
It was. What about special teams? I mean, now that Cade Foster has got a concussion, Shelley coming in the game for kickoffs was not the answer. Because I think my stats had he kicked the other six, and he averaged 55 yards. Now that presents a whole different situation for kickoffs.
Yeah, I continue to be disappointed with our distance on kickoffs, but I was surprised to now have to be disappointed with our coverage units. You know, we allow 223 yards in kickoff returns. If you're kicking them into or out of the end zone, that number can quickly go to nearly zero. And you're talking about hidden yards in a ball game, 223 is a lot.
It is, but I think it speaks to why Cade Foster has been the guy. Because before he got his concussion, he did three kickoffs and he averaged 66 yards, which is far better than the 61 he's been doing. And
right.
So he was nailing the ball on his three kickoffs. And then when Shelley came in, that was a 10-yard drop-off. I mean, going from 65 yards to 55 yards, I mean, Shelley's balls were coming. They weren't even making it to the 20-yard line.
You know, and it's beating a dead horse here, but I just can't fathom that we can have a dominant team in so many facets and we can't find somebody to kick the ball, you know, into the end zone. It's very surprising to me.
What about the punting? I think we have found our one weak answer to our crappy punting. He only got to take one punt. And so because he got to put all his energy into that one punt, he actually kicked it 44 yards.
Yeah, it was a good punt. He only had to punt once, which, you know, that's good that we only have to punt once. But to be honest with you, I wish he had punted twice. That fake field goal or that field goal attempt, 54 yards, was kind of a bad deal. But, you know, he got a 44-yard punt, and so that's something that he can spend this next week, you know, sort of feeling good about. And, you know, hopefully if it's just a confidence thing that he can build on that.
Hey, what about your game balls? I've got some interesting angles for you with the offensive game ball, but I'm going to let you start.
Well, there's no question that you're going to have interesting angles and you're going to kind of screw up our program, but, you know, that's part of it. I am giving my, again, in the true fashion of the award.
Oh, my God.
To Wormack. I think he looked really good. We've given him some grief this season. I thought he looked really good. He was pulling and I thought really clearing some holes for Trent and the other runners. So I am giving my nod to Chance.
So you're giving some love to the big uglies, man. I like that.
I am.
I have got two offensive game balls. The first game ball has to go to Brandon Gibson because he was the target of a few passes in the game. His only pass completion was for a touchdown. I'm not sure, but I think it might have been his first touchdown of his career. We'll have to check that. But here's a guy who's a senior. You know, he was a highly touted player out of high school, comes to Alabama, doesn't end up being the go-to guy, but he's just a worker. He comes in, he blocks his butt off down the field all the time. He never complains. On special teams, he gives it everything he's got. I just was so happy to see him catch a touchdown.
Yeah, Brandon Gibson's a hard worker. He's a good cement player on a team. He's a good role player.
See, that was a great game ball. Do you like that one?
Yeah, you're following the rules. Now, how are you going to screw it up?
Now, the other game ball has just got to go to all 11 offensive guys on Trent's spectacular run. Because we alluded to this at the beginning of the podcast, but this is just the essence of putting a hat on a hat. Because every one of these guys was giving it everything they had, even blocking down the field between White and Smelly and Mays and Barrett Jones. I mean, that's just the epitome of team effort. And I just go back and look at that one run, and it's like, man, if you're Trent, you've got to give it everything you've got when your guys are doing like that. I mean, that's just how you draw it up on the chalkboard. And most teams just don't give that effort. I mean, we talked about this team maybe not having, you know, fire in their belly last year after winning in 09. Well, they've got their fire in their belly right now.
So let me get this right. You're giving away 11 game balls on that one play?
I'm just giving one big-ass game ball to all 11 guys on that play.
Interesting. All right. That's a lot of balls. What you got on defense?
I started to give myself a game ball for calling Trent to win the Heisman Trophy like a year and a half ago, but I'm not going to do that because I don't think I'm eligible for a game ball.
No, indeed not.
On defense, I'd like to give it to Nico Johnson. You know, I don't know if he got a little confidence after the play last week, but Nico had a spring to his step. And, you know, he ended up having two tackles for loss, which were key plays. He was doing some sideline to sideline and finished the game with six tackles. I know you alluded to it earlier, but I think this is the best game Nico's played at Alabama.
Well, yeah, and I have Nico down for my defensive game ball as well. You know, he did lead the team in tackles. One of his tackles for loss was a sack. He did seem to play a little more inspired today. You know, he was getting a lot of the third down reps. You know, I think Nico's going to be one of those guys that, you know, Lorenzo Washington and Brandon, you know, Dietrich, that we miss them when they're not here, even though they weren't, you know, superstars.
That's a good call. Yeah.
And so we lament like, oh no, CJ Mosley's out and Dante's not performing up to speed. But Nico kind of quietly steps in there and feels, I think, pretty adequately, starts to fill those roles. And he could be a guy that we look at a year or two down the road and say, well, you know, we miss that type of linebacker presence. And I think that Nico has a high ceiling. I think that he's the type of player that could go on to have a better pro career than he's had a college career. Because, you know, they're going to ask him to do things differently in the NFL. And I think he's more of an NFL type, you know, middle linebacker, not so much in college where there's a lot of spreads and a lot of coverage, but just more of a pure, you know, Patrick Willis type middle linebacker.
Right. He's going to be able to do what he does well.
Yeah. I think he's the kind of player that we can certainly appreciate now, but we really run the risk of appreciating him more when he's gone.
That's a good call. What do you think about this game against Tennessee?
I think that, you know, they've got their quarterback out. I think he'll still be out. They've got their best wide receiver out. I don't think we're going to run up the score with them. You know, Dooley coached with Saban. I think they have a good relationship.
Yeah, that's a shame, man, because, you know, I wouldn't mind them running up the score on the Vols.
No, I wouldn't mind that either. Now, I don't think it's going to be pretty. I think it's going to be a 36-7 style ball game. I think we're in control most of, you know, pretty much the entire contest. But I don't think we get into the 40s, certainly not the 50s.
Well, I was surprised when they played LSU this past weekend. LSU scored 38 points on them, but the Vols defense did pretty well. You know, LSU's star players didn't really put up a whole lot of stats. And so I think they're going to give us a little better test on defense than I would have expected before I watched them play LSU. But without their starting quarterback, I mean, it's kind of like Florida losing their quarterback and then the next week the opponent is LSU. I mean, for them to have to come in and play us with their JUCO quarterback, I do think that the defense is going to wear out. And, you know, you're probably looking at something like a 35-10 type of ball game. I think they'll put up a few more points. But, I mean, with this defense, man, I mean, this is just scary to think that this Alabama defense has given up, what, 6 or 7 points a game on average now?
Yep. Yeah, 7 points a game and, you know, just over 30 yards a game rushing allowed. It's a pretty pretty scary defense. I don't know if you saw the quote. I think it came out today, but, you know, Derek Dooley on how to play against and how to prepare for Alabama. He said, well, don't score on them first because that just pisses them off.
Well, you know, I will say after watching, you know, when we were watching the Ole Miss game, curious your thoughts here real quick, but when they scored that first touchdown – my first inclination was that's going to be their only points. And that's pretty cool that we can have the confidence right now that playing away, that I can sit there and say, hey, that might be the only points they score in the whole ballgame.
And the fact that I got more mad that it happened than I was concerned. And
right.
So I think that our team reacted in much the same way, that they were more ticked off that that had happened. And so now I really have to do something to prove that we're the better team rather than, oh, no, I have to concern myself with how do we get enough points to win.
Yeah, you just pissed me off now. You shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, I have to do something more than just beat you 30 to nothing to prove that I'm the more dominant team. I really have to ratchet up the degree to which, you know, I exert my domination. And then we did it, you know, 52-7.
Big fashion.
52 unanswered points. You know, we certainly did it.
Well, hey, man, I enjoyed it, man. Look forward to doing this next week.
Absolutely. This has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for listening. Be sure to drop us an email at alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com to be added to our mailing list. And follow us on Twitter @BamaFootballPod. Until next time, roll tide.
Blow the horn. Let's go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
All right.